Hello, the internet, and welcome to season 37, episode 3 of Der Daily Zeitgeist!
Yeah!
For June 27th, 2018. Thank you, Iffy. My name is Jack O'Brien, a.k.a. I was O'Brien when I met you. I was Aerosmith, and I'm thrilled to be joined by today's co-host, one of the funniest comedians and performers anywhere. He is Mr. Iffy Wadiway!
A.k.a.
We're living most our life living in the Iffy's paradise.
Uh-huh.
You know, gotta give it up to my man Coolio. He doesn't get enough love.
I wonder if those songs were from the same year. Mine was supposed to be Crying by Aerosmith. I don't know if anybody can tell, because I haven't heard that song since I was 12. By the way, that AKA was from at Snarky Desad. Good Twitter handle. And Iffy, it's lovely to have you. Great jaw. You did a good job. You brought it for Miles, who is still in Europe. Holding it down, living that World Cup life. I think he was in a small town today where smoking weed is legal, and it's a really weird, like, permanent Renaissance fair, like, the town is. It's, like, self-incorporated, very strange place anyways. We will never see Miles again, and we are thrilled to have in our third seat one of the funniest comedians and performers and just people anywhere, Mr. Kurt Braunohler.
Hello.
Hey, man.
Hi, how you doing?
Thank you for doing the show. We're excited to have you.
Having me. Excited to be here. Let's talk about stuff.
All right. Your famous catchphrase. Talk about stuff.
No, my catchphrase is, oh, Braunohler.
Kurt, what is something from your search history that is revealing better?
The revealing about who you are part is difficult, but the best one I could find is just Dennis Miller cha-cha. Because I was really just like, did he actually just say cha-cha all the time? And he does. He totally says cha-cha and babe all the time. I mean, babe, I remembered, but I was like, cha-cha? Like, that seems crazy.
Yeah. Right.
Because I think there's a thing I don't know if other people do it, but I do it all the time, where it's like, if I had a time machine and I went back in time, could I be a successful stand-up during that time period? And I don't know if I could in the 80s if cha-cha, people were just like, yep, very funny. Very funny.
That is good stuff.
I know. I've when I think about that, I think about the fact that I'd have to have like a nickname, because that was the big thing for black stand-ups back then, was like, yo,
Earthquake.
I'm Tokyo. Let's go.
Right. Yeah, cha-cha. You would need to, like, find your stand-up comedy mantra or something that, like, worked for you.
I know.
Or cha-cha.
I've gone through it many ways. Like, or you figure out, like, right the time when, like, a certain new form of comedy became, like, relevant in, like, small clubs in the Greenwich Village or something.
Right.
And then you go there and you become really big in, like, that small thing. And then you, like, kind of take off with a new type of comedy that's just your comedy.
There you go.
From the future.
What is something you think is overrated?
I got a bunch, but I think I'm going to go with walking slow.
Walking slow is overrated.
No, I mean, sorry, it's underrated.
Okay.
Yeah,
we'll
do
underrated first.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, walking slow is underrated.
I like that.
I've been doing that a lot recently. And it's like, I used to be a real fast walker. I lived in New York City, and it was always just like, get out of my way. I'm important. And now I really enjoy a slow stroll around my neighborhood. Usually if I'm like trying to write and stuff, I just walk slowly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I find it's very, very relaxing to have no place in particular to go.
Yeah, no, I
do. It's also called being unemployed. Currently not having a job.
Yeah, no, I didn't realize how fast I walked until I had a daughter, and I would walk with her and notice that she's tripping because I'm taking such large strides. I'm like for a while, I was like, why is she falling so much?
What the fuck is this kid's problem?
I'm running.
Like, we got to get her checked out by the doctor. She's just...
How old is she?
She's two.
Two. I've got 15 months, so she hasn't walking yet.
Oh, just wait. It's the worst.
15 months is fun. What is something you think is overrated?
Comedians doing improvised hours of stand-up. Fuck it. I'm over it. It's the last thing in my life that I want to watch is people getting up and not performing stuff they wrote.
Right.
I'm done with it. I'm done. And this coming from a person who used to do a one-man improv show in 2001. So I understand where they're coming from. But if I'm paying money to see comedy, I want to see you have written jokes and have a lot of tags for every punchline. And I don't want to see just whatever's on the top of your head.
Yeah, no, I...
Because you're not that interesting.
Because that reminds me of, like, back in the day when it used to be big in the 90s. I don't know if you remember, Jack. Hip-hop artists, not the 90s, like the early aughts. Like, a lot mm-hmm. of hip-hop artists was like, I don't even write songs. I freestyle.
Right, freestyle, yeah.
I was like, I can tell.
Yeah.
Right. Trust me. You're not fooling me.
Like, right. You use the word day a lot because it rhymes with a bunch of stuff.
Yeah, and then freestyling, yeah, that used to be so cool. And yeah. But you could tell a lot of the times it was just people had written stuff, right? Mm-hmm. And were just coming in and acting like they were just doing their standard rhymes over beats, just like real standard beats.
Yeah, yeah. You had to start it off with either like a lighter, like about to smoke weed in this booth.
Right.
That's bad for the mic, sir.
All right. And finally, what is a myth? What's something most people think is true that you know to be false, Kurt?
I think that you need to be an asshole in order to be like a great artist.
Uh-huh.
I think that's a myth. Okay. I think that's maybe being debunked more and more now. But it used to be like, you have to be like, I used to think this when I first started comedy, like the people who I thought were really, really funny treated other people like shit. And I was like, well, that's what you do. Like, really good comics, like, treat people like shit. So I have to, like, I won't respond to this email for a few days because I don't want to, I don't want them to know I'm not a good comic because I'm, like, attentive to my business.
You have it, like, fully drafted and very nice, and then you, like, go back and do, like, an edit on it where you're, like, take out the please and thank yous.
I'm a badass. I'm a badass.
Yeah, take this punctuation out of there. No funny person would ever punctuate the email. I do. I have done the same thing. And then, like, sent it out a day later. And also, I've done that and found it in my drafts folder like 3 weeks later. I'm like, oh, shit, I'm bad at my job. Why do you think that is? Because I do notice there are a lot of talented people who are fucking awful. And do you think it's a thing where they were awful before, or success in this town in particular corrupts people's personalities?
I've thought about this a lot because I've seen it. And you see it in comedy, I think, very, very often, just because you watch people go from being unknown to everyone knowing them, and you see it in a short span of time. And I've seen it happen with multiple comedians who were, like, wonderful, and then they get, like, fame and then are just monsters. And it happens often, so it's not like one person.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? And so my question always is in my head is it that they were just tricking us, that they were monsters all along, but they had to, like, learn to be, like, nice to people?
Yeah.
And then it just came out, or is there something about fame that, because I've also seen it happen where people go from cool to monster and then back to cool after they realize that they've been doing that. Like someone, like after a while, like a few years of being monsters, all of a sudden they have no friends left.
Yeah.
And then they're like, oh, I fucked up. And they go back to being a nice person.
Yeah.
So I think it must be something inherent in fame, but it's like, it's crazy that you, why don't you look out for it? Like we see it so often in comedy. Why not look out for it? Like when you know you're getting famous, be like, I don't want to be a dick.
Yeah.
You know?
Like it might be a trick thing because I feel like there is like a level of, when you watch someone like blow up to the stratosphere and you see like everyone around them start turning a little bit into yes men.
Uh-huh.
And so I feel like no one's there to call them out and be like, yo, you're acting different.
Yeah.
Cause they're just like, nah, I want to ride this wave with you.
Yeah.
And I think it's just a combination of those things. And I think like, I often think about how like, especially stand up, like you have to be a specific type of person to think that you're important enough to stand in front of a mic, say something, and have a group of people listen to you.
Yeah,
sure.
And there's like a certain like level of narcissism you need to actually get up on stage. And I feel like when you get that fame and you get so much positive reinforcement, that narcissism can blow up to a huge scale and with no one to check you.
With no one to check you.
Yeah.
Yeah, because also you're being rewarded for that narcissism all the time. People are like, we want to hear more of what you have to say.
Yeah.
It's like, yep, I am important, you know?
Right.
That's why I also find it's like people who that doesn't happen to are people who have friends from growing up.
Yeah.
Who, like, they still hang out with.
Right.
You know, like
LeBron style.
Yeah.
Just surrounds himself with the same people who knew him when he was 12. I really think that helps him a
lot.
Because he should be completely insane. And yeah, I'm sure he's a little insane.
Yeah.
But like from the time he was 13, he lived in a town where Nike and Adidas were taking out competing billboards just advertising only to him.
Yeah.
They were just trying to get him to sign with their company when he was a child.
Yeah. Whoa.
And he's not completely fucked.
Yeah.
Like that
that's
didn't
crazy.
Completely ruin him.
I
yeah.
had no idea.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's true too, Kurt, because if you think about like the friends that you have outside the industry, like your only friends, like I have a close friend who's not in the industry. He doesn't give a fuck about
yeah.
anything that right. I get or anything. Like I'm still the same iffy that like got him beat up in high school. So like, so he has no buffer. He's just like, okay, whatever. And I do think, yeah, your like hometown friends who just don't care about any of your success really because they're like, I have nothing to gain or lose from you because we know so much about each other.
Yeah.
Like those would be the ones that'd be like, you're acting different.
Yeah. Yeah. And also they have a framework where like all the little stuff that like would bother you,
mm-hmm.
like they don't understand it and it doesn't matter to them.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
right,
where you're just
right.
like, no, but I'm only a recurring guest star. I'm not the star. And they're like, you're still on a fucking TV show that
yeah,
I think
shut
is funny.
The fuck up. Yeah. Yeah, and I think you also brought something up, Iffy, that's kind of, I think, underrated is how differently people start treating you once you're successful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, I've had this thought with also, like, really attractive women mm-hmm. who, like, people are like, oh, they're so weird and, like, fake and stuff like that. And it's like, they never interact with people who aren't, like, partially brain dead when they're talking to, like, men.
Yeah.
Like, men are just like, whatever, you know, like they never interact with a fully functioning male's brain. So,
yeah
they're going to be like, sometimes that's going to be fucked up.
Or right. somebody who's trying to get something from
right,
them.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, it's like brain dead or trying to get. And I think that maybe is part of it too. When you become famous, people are trying to get stuff from you a lot, you know? Like, hey, no, well, now that you are doing, you will help me.
Yeah.
And so maybe you become more suspicious of human beings
right.
for that reason.
Yeah, I think so, yeah. This actually ties perfectly. We've never had somebody's myth totally tie perfectly into our first story like this.
Yeah.
But the first story we wanted to talk about is this Rolling Stone profile
Ooh.
Of one Mr. Johnny Depp. It is 10,000 words on Johnny Depp. And if you could have come up with a description of an article that I wouldn't want to read, that is it. 10,000 words on Johnny Depp. Rolling Stone is notably way more fascinated by Johnny Depp than I am. They have had him on their cover 5 times.
Yes.
Which is shocking to me because, I don't know, he's an actor and they're a music magazine, but I guess like they always identified him as like bad boy, outlaw sort of actor. So they sent a writer who did a wonderful job to hang out with him for like 5 days at his at this giant mansion that he was renting in London. And it is just one of the darkest profiles of any human being. Like, you've probably seen photos of him lately looking like he's been poisoned by plutonium. Like, his face is kind of degrading a little bit.
It's weird to see someone so thin yet so puffy.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
It's like a skeleton was inflated.
Right. Yeah, I think that's basically 5 years of untreated alcoholism, because as you're reading the Rolling Stone article, you may be interested in this article pops up, and it's like 2013, Johnny Depp. Single, sober, and like he looks great.
Yeah.
It's just like, okay. And then in this article, he's talking about how people claimed that he was spending $30,000 on wine a month, and or $300,000 maybe. And he was like, that's way too little. I spend way more than that on wine. And he's just like staying up all night. He like wakes up at like when the sun is setting and like just stays up all night watching movies and cracking up a bunch of yes men, basically what we were just talking about.
Everything that you've just described up until this point is a description of a vampire.
Yes.
And that's my new conspiracy theory that Johnny Depp was bitten by a vampire and
right.
that's his new life.
Well, that's his band, right? The Hollywood Vampires.
Oh, no.
Yes. Yeah, it is.
Oh, no.
He is fully aware that that's what it seems like. That is that's the weird thing too, where he drifts in and out of seeming like he has self-awareness.
Right.
In this, and that's what I think is the most interesting thing about reading that because I read the whole thing too, and I was like, this is like a like 1/8 of the way through. I was like, this has got to be over soon. I was like, oh my God. I saw the little bar on the side.
It's just a tiny speck in the upper right hand corner. Yeah.
And so that's the thing that's fascinating to me about it. It's like you lose that outsider perspective. Also, what I wanted to know is how did that writer is amazing. Like, did that writer do drugs? Because how is he staying up until dawn, 8 a.m. with this guy every night without doing drugs? That's what I don't understand.
I mean, he keeps talking about how he's tired. That is Stephen Roderick. He does frequently. He's like, and I was on the verge of passing out sitting up, but like I had to tell Johnny Depp finally that I had to leave him. But Johnny Depp is constantly just like making people hang out with him and, you know, telling bad jokes, and he like has this sense of humor that's really awful. There's probably the most damning line in the thing is Roderick writes, Depp considers himself a funny man. And then, and then like one of his jokes is he's bragging that he said Dirty Sanchez in Pirates of the Caribbean, and like, but it was too real for Disney, and they had to like cut it out. And
too real, too dumb.
Yeah. He also like plays a Don Rickles joke from Sugar Ray Robinson's roast from the 70s that's like just openly racist. Yep. And he's like, man, that was ballsy, huh? The writer's like, yeah, man, I guess. But yeah, it's really, I don't know, like there hasn't been a great portrait of, you know, this sort of the logical extreme of sort of the pathological narcissism that Hollywood sort of encourages, and that, you know, even just American culture, we all sort of worship fame and like fame is a religion sort of thing. There hasn't been a great portrait of what that looks like when it's just totally running on empty, like just completely fucked in a long time. Like it reminds you of like Sunset Boulevard a little bit, the old movie where a writer, like his car breaks down like next to the mansion of a silent film actress like 30 years after people stopped making silent films, and she's just like completely bonkers. It's where the line, I'm ready for my close-up, Mr. DeVille, is from. Grey Gardens is another example of just sort of opulence in decline. And this is, I think, one of the great portraits that I've seen.
What is interesting, too, is that he has 14 houses.
Yes.
And, like, he has such money problems that he's like in this giant lawsuit with his old management company. But like, imagine just selling one house of 14. How can you have an emotional relationship with a 14th house?
Yeah. Right.
Do you know what I mean? Like, what it's like having an emotional relationship with a hotel you stayed in 10 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, just be like, no, I can't give up the experience of ever staying in that hotel again.
Yeah.
I know it's my 14th most valuable house, but it'll always be my 9th favorite house. So it's like, well, okay. So there's a great line by Bono, actually, of all people, who says about fame, if you sit down to dinner and you realize that everybody who's there is being paid by you, that you're probably an asshole. And there's a moment towards the end of the article where the writer goes, I want to go home but feel reluctant to leave. One of the most famous actors in the world is now smoking dope with a writer and his lawyer while his cook makes dinner and his bodyguards watch television. There is no one around him who isn't getting paid. Like, that's just what his life is now. His best friend, and like it seems like his only friend, is his lawyer, who is like just, you know, seeing him through all these like financial lawsuits, and you know, he just hasn't paid attention to money at all ever, and is in all sorts of debt. And the only weird thing is that they don't really focus on the Amber Heard thing, but I think it's probably because there's enough horror to go around without it.
Yeah.
And I mean, they mention it, but I think he's probably reluctant to talk about it. But I mean, that is sort of an important background to all of this, is just the scenes from that marriage are like straight out of a horror movie, except like a really pathetic one. There's one part where she talked about how he cut off the tip of his finger and wrote Easy Amber on a mirror in blood and then wrote starring Billy Bob Thornton because he thought Billy Bob Thornton had sex with his wife.
But it's like
Easy Amber is such a seventh grade insult. It's like, dude, what is wrong with you?
Oh, no.
But also that's what's interesting too that you learned through the article is that the reason the reason that he is in this this specifically dark hole is because he lost contact with his sister who stopped talking to him when he wouldn't agree to do a prenup with Amber Heard.
Right. Yeah.
And so now that he doesn't have the person he grew up with anymore is when he like really goes into this vampire spiral.
Right. Who like managed all of his belongings and
Yeah,
I mean, it's literal, like, vampirism was originally seen as, like, a metaphor for, like, capitalism, like, sucking the life force out of things, and, like, it really almost is a actual living metaphor for that in this article.
It really is.
Yeah, but his sister, like, that's a really good point, that it was his sister who was running his career prior to all of this shit going wrong for him. All right. So things are bad for Johnny Depp, but fortunately for the rest of the world, everything's going great, guys.
Yeah.
We're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be right back with just terrible news. And we're back. And one more Johnny Depp fact before we have to get into the bad news. I'm stalling, as you can tell. He wanted to dig a tunnel that connected all of his Hollywood homes. He has 14 homes, you guys. Not all of them in Hollywood. So not clear whether he would have expanded the tunnels to connect to his homes in London or not. But he is not good with money. So you guys, Justice Kennedy is retiring. He's long been thought of as the swing vote whenever the liberal side of the court wins a decision. It's usually because Kennedy has come over. He is going to retire in July, and so there will be an open seat for Trump to fill. And that's very bad news because the Supreme Court has already been showing a tendency towards, you know, right-wing ideologues. In the past few days, really.
So here's my question about this. Why isn't there a fail-safe for this? Because this has been the system for hundreds of years, right? That presidents put in Supreme Court judges. Is it just like, oh, well, it'll be like fucked for 50 years until the next person dies? Or is there like some way to... Because it does seem crazy that now it's just... a majority of people who always vote the exact same way.
Yeah.
Right.
You can kind of like just not bother bringing it to the Supreme Court because you know which way they're going to vote because they're just right-wing weirdos.
Right. So one thing that has been thrown around, and I think FDR either did it or was talking about doing it, was he had a similar issue where the court was fucking things up and holding back progress in America. And he was going to just start nominating additional justices, sort of flood the court with more justices because there's nothing in the law that says
you can't
need nine.
Interesting.
Yeah. So he can technically do that, or she, whoever ends up being the president after Trump.
You mean Trump?
Right.
Oh, boy.
So, I mean... this comes on the heels of the Supreme Court upholding Trump's travel ban, which the minority decision Sotomayor said is, you know, put in the same tradition as the Supreme Court decision that upheld internment camps for Japanese people during World War II. Like, that's not some left-wing rag that is making that comparison. That is a Supreme Court justice in the minority decision, you know.
But then to rub her nose in it, they, like, went and, like, reversed that.
Right.
The next day.
Right. They said in the majority decision, they were like, and this has nothing to do with that. And, in fact, that was a bad decision. We're officially coming out as saying that that's a bad decision.
Just in time.
Yes. So... I don't know. This is going to be an ongoing story, one of the main ongoing stories for the next couple of months. The Supreme Court also decided today to fuck unions over because they're way too strong in America. So they can no longer compel federal employees to pay dues into unions, which is going to make unions way poorer. So it's an already right-wing Supreme Court. Kennedy has been on the conservative side. He's been on the majority side for these past handful of decisions that have gone conservative. So it's not like he's a reliable liberal vote, but he has been a reliable champion of women's reproductive rights. He has been a champion of gay rights. So those are two, you know, incredibly important places where we could see things backslide a little bit if everything goes according to the horrible fucking plan that the right wing will kind of try to hatch here.
So does that mean that I don't have to pay my SAG dues anymore?
That's a good question.
I think that's what it means.
It could be.
Or it means that they can't kick me out if I don't pay.
I know.
Right? Yeah.
Maybe.
We got to get to the bottom of this, Kurt. I am Find now out interested.
If Kurt needs to pay his SAG union dues.
And if you were pointing out that there was a federal judge in San Diego that issued an injunction basically saying that the government needs to reunite families in like 14 days, I think.
Yeah. In a strongly worded opinion, U.S. District Judge Dana Sabraw wrote, "Facts set forth before the court portray reactive governance, responses to address a chaotic circumstance of the government's own making. They belie measured and ordered governance, which is central to the concept of due process enshrined in our Constitution. And under the order, children younger than 5 years old must be reunited with their parents within 14 days, while older children must be united with their parents within 30 days. Within 10 days, federal authorities must allow parents to call their children if they're not already in contact with them." Which, also, that seems like a problem since they don't know where a lot of the children are, so that's like putting a Band-Aid on a gun wound, it seems like.
But it is a common sense thing that if it had any teeth would be really good news for, you know, these families that have been torn apart. But because it can be appealed and, you know, like eventually would end up with the Supreme Court, it doesn't really mean anything, I feel like.
Yeah,
at this point.
It's I'm very cynical after these last two rulings. I was like, okay, so Supreme Court's going to be trash again.
Yeah. Three rulings, because there was also them saying that people who are talking to women who come in like pregnant don't need to tell them about like options included that involve abortion.
Yeah.
And what's interesting is those crisis pregnancy centers are so evil.
Yeah.
Like they are set up to make people believe that this is where you go to get an abortion, and they're always in states that it's like not very available. And then when you get in there, they kind of like trick you and don't give you the information that like abortion is legal and you can get one if you wanted one.
Oh yeah.
Right. Instead, they show you like pictures of aborted fetuses and
like traumatized teenage girls.
Right. Show you that photo of the baby's hand reaching out and like holding on to the surgeon's finger that it turns out was completely doctored and not an accurate thing. But we did want to kind of dig in a little bit more on the travel ban because it's just fucking all sorts of people's lives up, particularly people from Iran. And super producer Anna Hosnier has family in Iran, has traveled there in the not-too-distant past. So I wanted to ask you, Anna.
I am a success story.
You are.
Just kidding.
well, these articles we were writing were kept being like, Iranian immigrants are like the most successful immigrants in the history of America. They're like 10 times more successful, have like 10 times the homeowning wealth. And I was like, damn.
My father never hears this. He does not need to hear this. No, it's true. It's because so my parents are from Iran. I'm first generation. I was born and raised in America, luckily. So I am a citizen for now. Uh-huh. And it's an interesting thing because they come from Iran, which is, it's a country, a lot of, my parents came before the revolution, so they got to experience Iran in a different light. And after the revolution happened, they were like, no thanks, never going back there again. But they come here and they work so hard.
Right.
Like, my parents came to America and, like, learned English from, sorry to say this, watching The Cosby Show. And I know, very problematic. Let's not get into it. And, you know, they work so hard and they get these, like, nice jobs and they have this money and they have these opulent lifestyles. But it's like they came from, for the most part, nothing. And they, a lot of, another thing is Iranian parents are so stern. Like, they tell you every day, get your ass up. Go to school, get good grades, and if you're not going to do that, don't bother coming home. So you're like, literally, like, it's broken into you that you have to be successful. Yeah, that's why I can't sit down for 5 minutes without, like, feeling my father's weight on me. Like, whoa, I got to go. Let me just go plant a garden. Like, I just have to do things because that's how you're raised. And it's like in the culture is you work hard. It's just like work ethic is there. And it's kind of shitty to think that they're not going to allow all these, like, there's a brain drain that they're stopping from happening from coming into Iran. Like, I have cousins in Iran who are just, like, these, like, young kids, and they're being like, I'm going to be a neuroscientist. And you're like, what? Like, what does that even mean? Like, my uncle owns a school in Tehran, and I went and spoke to the students, and they all speak English perfectly. They're all like, hey, what's up? How you doing? What's going on? And I was like, oh, okay. Thought no one would speak English here.
Right.
And I was asking, like, what everyone wanted to do, and these are, like, 10-year-olds, and they're literally, like, engineer, scientist, engineer, doctor. I want to be a – yeah, one of them literally said neuroscientist. One of them was quoting Robert E. Lee to me, and I was like, I don't know what that quote's from, and he was like, okay. Like, he thought I was the idiot. They were like, what do you do? I was like, I'm a podcast.
Well, did you burn him by pointing out that Robert E. Lee is a traitor?
No, because I didn't even know the quote he was making. Like, I was like, ooh, that one's not clear to me.
Honestly, what you have to understand about U.S. history
exactly, like, what he was saying to me, and I was like, tight. Okay, anyway, check, please. I was trying to get out of there. But yeah, it's a culture that they love to learn, and, like, my parents are some of the smartest people, and their English is like, if you spoke to my dad today, you would not know he's been here since he was 24 years old. Like, you're right. Like, sir, do you speak English? Like, but then he's also an engineer and worked on the, like, was on the board for the Bay Bridge. Like, my dad helped build that bridge. And to me, that doesn't make any sense because he's such a goober in my eyes. Like, if we got him on the phone right now, he'd be like, ew, what? But he's one of the smartest dudes I know. And, like, my mom designs CCTV. My mom designs spyware for this country to spy on us, and they want to be like, this terrorist. Like, it's crazy.
It's really, it's going to be keeping people out of the country who,
geniuses.
You know, are, exactly. People who, like, the Uber CEO is Iranian. The founders of eBay are Iranian. Oh, like, a lot of,
my dad loves to bring up eBay. That's just like, he's like, you know, eBay.
Andre Agassi. Agassi.
My dad would always talk about Andre Agassi when I was growing up.
You know,
I'd be like, cool.
But I mean, so it's keeping some of, you know, the best and brightest in the world from coming to America. It's also forcing people who are in just horrible war-torn countries, you know, from, you know, getting asylum here, or, you know, getting out of where they are. A lot of people have, you know, one or two family members already in the U.S., and they're expecting to be able to bring their families here, you know, from Syria, for instance, like, which is just the worst place that you could possibly live right now. And they're now just going to be forced to stay there, like, as the government continues to gas its people. So it's just a really, like, there are all any number of ways to put a human face on it. But it is, you know, families that are being torn apart. And really, you know, if you're just looking at it from a purely, like, abstract political perspective, you know, it's not good for the country in the long run.
But here's my question. The idea, the thing that the Supreme Court backed up was the idea that the executive is within his power to limit travel based on, like, security threats.
Right.
And what Iranian is setting off bombs in America? When has there been an Iranian terrorist attack on American soil. There's never been.
That's the interesting thing.
So then how can the Supreme Court fucking back it up?
I think they don't care for a country that is run by a regime that hates America so much.
Yeah.
But those are the people, like the good people are trying to get out from underneath the regime.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
I mean, really, if we wanted a travel ban that worked the way that you're saying, where it'll protect us, it would be banning travel to and from Hot Topics to fuel all these school shooters. Because that's been the number one attack that we've been having on American soil this past year.
And it has mainly been the Hot Topic gear that has 100%. Fueled it. And
you see the Rick and Morty shirts on them.
The Rick and Morty shirts are the real problem.
Well, that's the thing. Also, a lot of it has to do with money. Countries that make money for the U.S. are not on the travel ban.
Saudi Arabia is not on the travel ban.
And guess who?
Regime. Talk about an oppressive regime.
Right.
Oppressive regime. If you bring money into this country, did 9/11. You're cool.
Who did 9/11? Yeah.
They did 9/11.
The only
guys.
Plane that was allowed to leave American airspace after the attacks on 9/11 was a Saudi prince.
Yeah. Not none of the countries that are on the ban list have planned or carried out a terrorist attack in the United States for the past two decades. But yeah, I mean, it's a purely political decision, and the minority opinion in the Supreme Court, you know, one of the minority opinions compared it was like, this history is going to not look on this very kindly, and said it's exactly like, or, you know, in the same family as the internment camps. The other side was pointing out like how it's not doing what it claimed to do. I think the majority opinion was like, hey, it's not none of our business. The president can say whatever he wants as long as it's a security, you know, a security thing. Like, we can't intervene. And, you know, the people who were on the minority side of the opinion were like, look, it says that you can appeal to be allowed, like individuals, which would make sense if, you know, it was really concerned about security, that, you know, they would look at families' applications and be like, oh, okay, well, this family clearly is no threat to us, and let them through. But I think there's a total of like two or three appeals that have like actually been let through. So it's not a security thing. It's just purely political. And I mean, there are members of the Supreme Court who pointed that out, and they're just not getting anywhere.
I just want to say one last thing. Our gas is about to be so expensive because Iran puts out about 580 million barrels a day. So we have cut them off.
I mean, that's a,
that's it for
that's
us.
What I don't understand is like, is it just that America's dumb? Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
Like, is it just that we've defunded education for so long that we now have a populace that's so fucking stupid that like this makes sense to them?
Well, I think it's such a combination of many things. I do think that all of this is reactionary to 8 years of Obama. Like, and I think that really woke up the racist. And I think they really came out. And I think just also that with a combination of voter apathy that kind of happened, I think we're just going to see a huge shift in this space of politics. I mean, even with New York, you know, a socialist winning is big, you know. So I think it was a combination of racism, social like political apathy, and just no one really kind of paying attention to what's going on. And I do think, in a weird way, I think this is going to evolve into just some just dumb way that it's going to like change everything in also a good way after a long, it's not going to be quick, it's not going to be easy, it's probably not even going to be pretty, but I think in the end it's going to be good. Like, I can hear, just based on what Anna just said, you know, about the gas going up, I can hear Elon Musk's boner from over here. Like, I feel like that's going to just, like, we're going to be so busy putting out the fires that Trump are starting that I think we're going to be better for it. And that's just me being a huge optimist.
I hope so. I hope you're right, because to me, I worry that we're just. Well, I was in Winnipeg this last weekend. They have this huge human rights museum there, and I went through it. And there's a huge floor on the Nazis. And to learn that Adolf Hitler, from being time to be elected to him instituting fascism, was 3 months. So they had a democracy. And he, within 3 months, went from democracy to fascism. And I was like, that's so fast. That's so fast that I'm scared every day.
Yeah. I do think the, you know, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, the 28-year-old Democratic socialist who just beat like a very moderate Democrat in New York who was like so part of the, you know, power elite in the Democratic Party that he was expected to take over the Speaker of the House from Nancy Pelosi if, you know, she stepped down when the Democrats take it back, when the Democrats take it back in November. But I really think it is, that's a sign that it was about apathy. You know, nobody was excited to vote for this guy Crowley, who's like, you know, might as well have been a, you know, Hillary Clinton type, whereas Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez was a Bernie Sanders volunteer who was like totally involved in, you know, that whole movement. And I think that's going to be important, is that, you know, using people's, taking people's interest now, like people are worried about politics now, but you have to, you can't just be like, okay, well, they're interested in politics now, so we take their vote for granted and come along and vote for whatever Democrat we put in front of you. You have to have ideas and, you know, ways of changing things.
I also worry about, did you hear the last weekend, This American Life, on this guy, Jeff Beal, who was running for New York 19?
No.
Who is a Bernie Sanders-style Democrat, who, to the point where, like, the DCC, like disavowed him. They didn't like him. And he finished fourth.
Oh, did he?
Wow. And is just, like, the mainstream main guy Democrat is the one who's going to be it. So it's like, I don't know. It's like, I'm very worried still.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it is very cool that NY14.
Yeah, because I feel like there's still just a level that we're still going to be fucked by gerrymandering. I feel like, you know, that's still a huge element. Like, it makes sense that the Bronx is going to vote for this young up-and-comer, you know, whereas, like, if you have a traditionally older Democratic area, they're just going to try and stay the course. And so that's what we're going to go. But I don't think this necessarily means the party's going to be split. I think the party just knows what it wants. And I think that there are... Right now, we know there are two. There is a line in the sand, and I think when it comes down to it, when it comes to the big election where Trump has to go up against someone, I don't think we're going to run into the same issue that we had between Hillary v. Bernie. I think we're really going to be like, all right, let's just get him out, and then we'll work from there. I feel like that's the energy.
I hope so.
Yeah, me too. Me too, because I felt that was what was going to happen the first time.
Yeah.
But, you know.
All right, we're going to take another quick break, and we'll be right back to wrap it up. And we're back. And there's a couple smaller stories. Joe Jackson, Michael Jackson's father, has passed away. Not that many takes on this. We'll have to name a new scariest looking man alive. But yeah. If you were pointing out that it's good that he lived long enough to see the Teddy Perkins episode of Atlanta.
To see him honored, you know, now that he's in the big house in the sky chasing Mike under the bed.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, you know, bad dad.
Bad dad.
Very mean. I like, that's my take. Very mean, bad dad. Yeah. Sad.
Sad. And you also had a Facebook post that you're reading that had everybody intrigued this morning.
Okay, yeah. So, yeah, this is a post that someone has been sharing, and it's about this guy who seems like he's an incel. He seems like there's a lot wrong with him, and the first sentence kind of sets the tone, but it gets worse every paragraph. So I'm just going to read it. I'm going to do a quick live reading.
Okay.
Because it's pretty long. He posted this. By the way, he posted this. No one is posting this about him. No one posted. This is his choice.
He posted this to Facebook.
Yes.
Got it.
So here it is. I often eat alone at a Wendy's that's just down the street from my house. A little less than a week ago, I noticed that they hired a new employee. She's a fair-skinned woman who, for the sake of not violating a pending order of protection, will say she's named Michelle.
Oh, no.
Yeah. I was fond of her from the moment I first saw her. I immediately went home and scoured the internet to find out more information about her. I figured that this way I'd be able to learn her interests and engage her in conversation regarding them. I remember initially thinking to myself, it's a shame that how name tags don't include last names. All I had to go on was her first
So
all I had to go on was her first name and location, yet thanks to Facebook's ability to search city and state, I was able to find her just after a few hours. Once I did...
Not good, Facebook. Not good.
Once I did, I realized I hit a gold mine. Her phone number was visible to everyone, not just Facebook friends. Most women are scared to give out their numbers to a stranger because they don't think they're trustworthy. But if someone...
I wonder why.
But if someone asked you out on a date after looking you up and learning your phone number without you having to tell them, you'd likely be far more trusting of that person since they already know your personal info. You'd have nothing to lose. That was my line of thinking anyway. After obtaining her phone number, I figured I'd try and do something romantic that would build up to me asking her out. I decided to use an app that would let me text her without revealing my actual number. This app allowed me to change my number at will, essentially making it unblockable, which I thought was a good idea since she might think it was one of her friends messing with her and block it right away. This would grant me the ability to remain a complete enigma to her. Jesus once a day, Christ. I told myself. Only text her once a day so it isn't creepy.
This guy fucking rules.
Sadly, I was far too excited at the prospect of having my first girlfriend to stick to that. My first text to her was simply...
He's so many steps ahead of himself.
Oh, man.
She's already his girlfriend.
Yeah. My first text to her was simply, I saw that picture of your graduation you posted. You're beautiful. Later that day, while I was sitting in the Wendy's parking lot, I sent her another text that said, I can see you right now. One day you'll see me too. Before I knew before I knew it, I had texted her over 300 times in just a few days.
Before I knew it.
Yeah. She never once responded to any of them. Still, not all messages contained text. Some were just pictures of her that I took while she was at work to let her know I was actually there. Some of you may have noticed that I wasn't online at all yesterday. There's good reason for that. Yesterday was the day that I met her in person and tried to ask her out. It didn't go as planned. I walked up to Michelle while she was at the counter and told her that I'm her admirer. Her cheerful expression changed as she suddenly started shouting, "This is the guy! Marco, this is the guy!" Marco is her manager. He jumped from behind the counter and grabbed me while instructing her to call the police. I bit his arm hard enough to draw blood,
but he
did not release me until the police arrived. The police said that the detainment was lawful, which meant I was to be charged with battery for biting the manager in addition to stalking. This amounts to almost $500 in fines. Thankfully, Father told me he'd take care of it since I'm currently unemployed.
Father?
Father.
This is fiction. I call it, father.
That detail's too good.
Father, it's fiction. There's too much psycho in it.
Pushed me, father.
He pushed it one step too far for me.
The police also told me that since she's filing for an order of protection, so I can't return to that specific Wendy's. Father told me to keep my chin up and to remember that some women just aren't worth it. He said that if she thinks having a guy flatter her and thinks about her all the time is something to call the police over, then she must be one of those nutty feminists. After spending some time thinking about it, I realized that he's right. Sometimes you just have to remind yourself that it's not you. It's them. Uh-huh. Yeah, no, that ending. That ending was just too...
Took it too far.
Otherwise, I would have been not sure. Do you know what I mean? I still would have thought it was fiction. How many friends?
Let's see. He's followed by seven... Wow, he does... he is updating quite a bit. It seems pretty regular, but I don't know. The case is still out. As a matter of fact, Zeit Gang, tell us what you think.
Yeah.
Do you think this is a real person? Do you think this is a troll account for lulz?
The father thing is almost too much, but I can see like that. I can just based on having listened to or watched a lot of those Elliot Rodgers videos, the dude who ended up being a mass shooter who like shot women for not having sex with him at Santa Barbara. Like, and that is the exact tone. It's
really?
Like just completely deranged. No, I like just only views women as, you know, objects who are obligated to have sex with him at some point if he puts in enough effort. But he never called his dad father.
Yeah. So that father.
I don't know why that's the worst part of it, but it does seem like it's the furthest into just, yeah.
I do make my daughter call me father. But
of course. A father.
A father.
Oh, shit. That's terrifying.
Yeah.
Hopefully it's not true. But yeah, people... let us know what you think. If anybody has any inside tips, or if you're like, oh yeah, that's my cousin.
Yeah.
let us know. We have time for a brief World Cup date. Yeah, there it is. Time for your World Cup date, folks. Germany has been bounced.
Argentina. Yay.
So yeah, that's apparently this happens a lot. The defending champ just comes in and shits the whole house. And this time is no different. Why if you're somebody who pays more attention to this than I do, why do you think that is? Is it just they get too confident?
I think so, and I think there's just 4 years of, like, these guys go back to their leagues and play. So I feel like, you know, no, like any other sport, like, you know, Tom Brady in 4 years, LeBron in 4 years, you either get better or you get older and worse. And I feel like the four-year gap between cups can really wear down on the individual players.
Right.
And when they come back, they just don't show up. Also, I imagine that... You know, these guys, I'm sure they're practicing from time to time, but, like, you know, you're on different teams using different strats. I can't imagine you being able to assemble, like, Voltron and just work.
Huh. Yeah, that's
interesting.
Those are
my two theories.
Who did they lose to?
They lost today to South Korea. Shout out South Korea.
Wow. Every time I see a post about World Cup, I assume that was the end of it.
No.
I was like, oh, look, it's the World Cup just happened. I missed it.
Oh, man.
When is the final game?
There are 16 teams left now.
That's when you were like, in this group, there's a bunch. Yeah. And I was like, oh, maybe it's really the beginning.
So yeah.
You are still. I think they are basically final. Argentina.
Boo.
Everybody
these
was.
Scumbags.
Just
these
talking shit
ne'er
about.
Ne'er-do-wells.
These scumbags. You're
going to beat the loyal, great team of Nigeria.
Yeah, Nigeria is out. Argentina is in after making a huge comeback. They lost their first game, I think, 3-0, and ended up winning the last one 2-1. And based on the bizarre rules of FIFA and international soccer, they made it, and Nigeria did not.
Made me sick to my stomach.
Yeah, Nigeria was a pretty cool team that had awesome uniforms.
Yeah.
All right, now... Iffy, I wanted to. Anything else from the World Cup? Kurt, you clearly are.
I got a lot of good stuff to say about it.
I mean, the only thing I really have to say about the World Cup is it's so fun watching just how the World Cup in America is being treated now that America isn't in it. Like, it's like, oh, who gives a shit? Ooh, you care about some kicking around some black and white ball? Whatever. We're over here talking baseball, you know?
Right.
Because, like, because World Cup is when everyone in America pretends to care about soccer as America goes through. But now, since America didn't make it, everyone just, it's almost like it's not even going on.
Yeah. Although I'm more interested in it this time than I have been in the past.
I enjoy watching soccer more than any sport.
Yeah.
You're just not a sport guy.
Because it's just I'm not a sport guy, but it's constant action.
Oh, yeah.
Every other game on television is boring. Yeah. Like, soccer just always moving. I like it.
Yeah.
I don't know anything about it. But.
Yeah.
Iffy, can you explain Fortnite and PUBG to us? Because this is, like, the thing that I feel like, as the host of a podcast that's supposed to be tracking the zeitgeist, I feel like I am falling down on the job when it comes to Fortnite and PUBG. This is, like, everybody below the age of 20, this is how they communicate to one another. They just, like, haven't seen relatives in years unless they're playing them on Fortnite. What's going on, man?
Well, basically, Hunger Games and Battle Royale were correct. In the future, our kids would be obsessed with competing to be the last man standing on an island. So that's basically the concept of Fortnite and PUBG is 100 players drop in on an item. You have to search for weapons and armor, and the last man standing wins. To give you a quick history, it all kind of started, some people will say it started with Minecraft Hunger Games. That's bullshit, and fuck you if you believe that. It all kind of started with an Arma mod that was like basically Battle Royale, and then eventually the guy who created that mod went on to help create this game called H1Z1, which was King of the Kill, which was a last man standing. Then eventually he jumped from that and created his own game, PlayerUnknown Battlegrounds. So
that's
all the while this going on, Epic's been developing this game called Fortnite, which was actually a kind of almost like tower defense game where you kind of build your base up and protect it against a horde of zombies. And then for shits and giggles, they're like, let's do a fun battle royale game mode, just since it seems like all the kids are into that. They blow up and they become like one of the biggest competitors to PUBG. And literally right now, they're kind of two factions. Currently, I think PUBG just recently did an update that kind of made the game smoother that I think it's going to start balancing out, but Fortnite has had the lead for so long. So then you enter Twitch, where there are a lot of streamers playing the game, and Ninja became one of the like most popular streamers.
And all these subscribers are like 14 years old?
No, some are adults. Some are adults. Some are me.
Okay. So you're a Twitch subscriber to this
guy.
Yeah,
I'm a Twitch, no, not to Ninja. I'm a Twitch streamer, but I live on that platform as well. But yeah, so it's kind of been these two battle royale style games, but they have two very different components. PUBG is more tactical, more realistic. It has a more realistic look to it. And Fortnite is more cartoony, and you can build stuff because they took the build aspect from their Save the World part of the game, and you can actually build a base while fighting, and that's the new tactic, is you try and build to get the high ground over the players and shoot down at them.
So Fortnite is like almost has a Nintendo feel to it. It's like sort of like cartoon characters like doing with like fun weapons as opposed to like realistic war weapons.
And
what is the platform that you play it on?
PC, and Fortnite currently is on PC, Xbox, PS4, and Switch.
Okay.
PUBG is currently on Xbox and PC.
Okay.
Got it. And so you're in a tournament coming up, right?
Yeah, I'm doing the Twitch Rivals tournament this Thursday. So I'm playing against, you saw me watching him earlier.
Yes.
This guy, Shroud, is insane, and he's in the tournament. I was hoping that for some reason he wouldn't be in it, but he's the favored guy. I'm a nobody on Twitch, so I am the biggest underdog, but I'm hoping to come through like the Celtics, you know, where people are like, oh! That's somebody to look out for.
Right. Yeah. Come with the Brad Stevens.
Yeah.
Cool, man.
So now, do people who are going to watch that, are they people who were playing and then got kicked out and then watch it? Or is it just other people who are like, I'm going
to
watch
this? Oh, there are people who watch people who are good. So Twitch as a platform is where you go to watch people who are either entertaining or very good at the game. Those are pretty much your two. I'm on the more entertaining side.
So just making jokes while you play, essentially?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then, so guys like Shroud and Ninja, people watch them because they're so good. And just like any other sport, you're watching them so you can be better at it, too. So that's that. So you're going to have a whole bunch of people watching because they're going to be trying to see guys like Dr. Disrespect, Shroud. And, you know, a few of my guys will be in there cheering me on. And hopefully the brand will get stronger and I'll get some of these guys on my side.
Now, are there like huge Fortnite or PUBG fans who have never played the game, do you think?
I feel like some people in my chat, because they're like, I watch you play it, but I do not care to play this at all.
Huh.
You know, yeah.
So there's just purely a spectator sport for them.
Yeah.
Interesting.
And I feel like that's where there's strength to it, because I think it's easy to follow. I think anybody can sit down and watch, like TV's Carl Tart.
Yeah, who's your roommate.
Yeah. He never plays it, but he can't help but stop and watch me play, because I think the concept is so simple. It's like, oh, you're just trying to survive.
Right.
If you're trying to be the last man standing. So you can just watch someone and you get what's going on, and as opposed to something like Dota or League of Legends, where it's like you're taking down towers and then you're pushing and then you're ganking, and then you're going to jungle. And you're like, what are all these words you just said?
Right.
Where the concept of Battle Royale, I think everyone's seen Hunger Games. Or, you know, all us weebs have seen Battle Royale, you know.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Kurt, it has been a pleasure having you here.
Thank you for having me.
Daily Zeitgeist. Where can people find you, follow you, enjoy you?
My last name is difficult to spell, so you can just Google Kurt Comedy, and I will be the first hit.
All right. And that's Kurt with a K.
That's correct.
And we usually ask our guests if there's a tweet that they want to share at this point. Not necessarily from themselves, but just anybody that you like.
Oh, wow. I missed this part. Nope, I don't have one. I don't have one that I think everything is like political at this point.
Yeah.
No, right.
And there's no more fun on Twitter. It used to be fun.
Yeah.
It is no longer fun. But I would love to plug the fact that I'm going to be in Flagstaff, Tempe, and Tucson at the end of July.
All right.
Ooh, it should be fun and hot.
Flagstaff won't be. Too bad. But yeah, Tempe and Tucson will be. So come on out.
Iffy. It's been a pleasure having you as a co-host today.
Oh, man.
Where can people find you and follow you?
You know, you can find me at ifywadiwe, ifynwadiwe on Twitter and Instagram. IfD's on Twitch. A lot of the Zeit gang has been coming through. Some people who just only stopped by to give me their Twitch Prime sub, which I'm totally down for. Thank you, everyone who did that. Remember, you get a free sub if you have Amazon Prime and you connect it to your Twitch account. You can give me that free Twitch Prime sub. You're going to have to do it once a month, though, so don't forget. As for comedy, all my people in New York, white women, me and Carl, are going to be in New York this weekend for the Del Close Marathon. I will also be doing stand-up at Triple Crown on right. Saturday at 6 p.m. And you know, also on the 12th of July, I'll have a show at Dynasty Typewriter. It's going to be called Afro Funk. It's a dope lineup. We're going to have Dulcie Sloan, Byron Bowers, tons of black comedy for you to just drip in. It's like Black Panther, the movie, except comedy.
All right. And do you have a tweet that you'd like to share with the audience?
Oh, yeah. I guess just to keep it in the fam of what we were talking about, I took Trump's tweet. So, you know, we all heard how Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez won New York. Donald Trump tweeted out, wow, big Trump hater Congressman Joe Crowley, who many expected was going to take Nancy Pelosi's place, just all caps, lost his primary election. In other words, he's out. This is the big one nobody saw happening. Perhaps he should have been nicer and more respectful to his president. And so I just retweeted that and went, so who's going to tell him that someone much worse, bigger enemy than Joe Crowley is right. just one, you doof?
Yeah. No, but that, I think that's what this was, a referendum on, you know, all those Bronx socialists were like, he should have been nicer to President Trump, I think. So you can follow me at Jack_O'Brien on Twitter. I'm going to share two tweets with you guys. One from former guest Jake Weissman, just pretended to like jazz to impress someone I'll never see again. I just deeply identified with that. And then at the Hubris guy. So Jack Prosobiec or whatever the fuck yeah. that asshole's name is, in the aftermath of like the civility wars, he wanted to make a point about how, you know, the right wing is being persecuted. He wrote, have they erected Republican drinking fountains yet? And and the hubris guy retweeted that and said, yeah, one got erected just the other day. It's called my dick. I thought that was the right answer to that. So well done, hubris guy. You can follow us on Twitter at Daily Zeitgeist. We're on Instagram at The Daily Zeitgeist. We have a Facebook fan page and a website, dailyzeitgeist.com, where we post our episodes and our footnotes.
Footnotes.
Where we link off to the information that we talked about in today's episode, as well as the song that we ride out on. And super producer Anna Hosnier has been bringing it as far as musical recommendations go. And I think she's going to continue doing that.
I have nothing. Just kidding. I love women. Big woman. Lover.
Yeah. The band, right? The band Women that is mostly white men?
No.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of them.
Today I'm going to recommend Stars by Connie Constance. She's this great artist out of England. She's just, I love her voice. She's like bringing soul back in the best way, baby. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And totally. She describes this song that it's about escapism, so I think we all need a little escapism during these great times in America. So enjoy that. It's Stars by Connie Constance.
All right, we're going to ride out on that. We will be back tomorrow because it is a daily podcast. Talk to you guys then. Bye.
In the park, it's late so it's dark, flicking but there ain't no spark, fire is my only gun, dancing to the beat of my heart, up to my knees in grass, sticks and stones can't leave scars, when I'm under the stars, when I'm under the stars, when I'm under stars, when I'm under the stars, when I'm under round in circles inside. Life is but a child's game. Dancing to the beat of my heart. Up to my knees in grass. Sticks and stones can't leave scars. When I'm under the stars. Pocket, take it home to my jar. Watch it manifest my own little universe. Let the others just while I shimmer the earth.